This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. Do the Lord a service, make your hands willing, your health for better living.
4-H,
for community and country.
4-H,
respond to food security.
4-H,
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
4-H.
We're back, folks. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM in beautiful downtown Waterloo on your best and local radio, or local community radio station. And today I have some great guests, and I'll just go quickly left to right on my guests today. And first of all, I'd like to say hello to Joel. Thanks for coming out today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Great. And I'd like to see Brendan. We've been trying this for some time, but never had much of a chance, did we?
Yeah, thanks for having me out.
You've been busy with all kinds of other stuff, so that's why you've been had a tough time getting out today. I'd like to have my guests bring along some music that we're going to play. And Brendan, what song did you choose here? I see a couple on my list here. I have one here called Home, right?
Yeah, that's a good one.
You like that one?
A little more folky.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you come by this song? Why did you like it?
It was recommended to me by a friend a few months ago. We were actually putting together a playlist for our wedding. It was one of the ones that came up, and it made the list.
All right, perfect. So, Brendan, today you're going to talk about, tell us just shortly what organization you're with and what you're going to talk about.
Sir, what was that?
The organization you're with and what you're going to talk about today.
Oh, I work for My Sustainable Canada, an environmental group, national Canadian group.
Mm-hmm.
And we do research and pilot projects to try to help organizations and individuals make more sustainable choices.
Okay.
Context of this show, I guess, a lot of the work we focused on over the past few years has been on leveraging the procurement capacity of healthcare to support agriculture.
And look forward to that discussion. And Joel, yourself, you're up from Guelph. I thought you came up from Mississauga today.
Yeah, so I live in the south end of Guelph, yeah.
And you're going to speak to us about weeds.
That's right. So we did a survey, I guess, across all of Canada with 500 growers and basically got some pretty cool results back. And so I want to chat to that about the herbicide resistance across Canada.
I did enjoy reading the press release. I saw some familiar things in there, so it'll be a great topic.
Good.
Okay, let's start off with a little song here first. This is the song that Brendan has brought along, and we'll be right back with that.
I do love you. this is Krista from Veld Architect. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, folks, we're back, and it's the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Steger, and hello, Joel. And that was, sorry, that's not Joel. I'm talking to Brendan right now. Brendan, that was the song by the son of Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros.
That's right, yeah.
Where did you hear those guys again?
A friend of mine recommended them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you pick up their CD or did you do the iTunes thing?
iTunes,
yeah.
iTunes all the way.
What's new with iTunes these days? You still got to pay a penny to get those or a buck to get those songs?
Yeah, 99 cents.
My friends are complaining so much that they don't like the new iTunes too much.
No?
No, it's got all these here trap doors and things going on.
Well, there's another way you can do stuff like Spotify, which is it's basically like radio but online.
Yeah.
It's a good way to discover new music, I find.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones I stumbled across through that.
Well, great. So thanks for coming in today, and we'll probably want to talk a little bit, first of all, where your home is at. Are you originally a Waterloo-ian?
I'm not. I was born in Winnipeg, grew up in a town just outside of KW called Flesherton, up mm-hmm. in the Collingwood area,
mm-hmm.
and then moved here, about 4 years ago after spending a year in Korea after university.
Mm-hmm. And I said, and now this has been your home for how many years?
About 4 years.
4 years, so...
Yeah.
You do get it that Weber Street crosses King Street twice.
Yeah. Yep, familiar with the highways and the roads.
So I first came upon your name looking through the Waterloo Region Food Systems.ca, and your name was on there as a one of the roundtable members.
Yep.
And read some of your blog material. But, maybe I think Mark Zerb actually suggested mm-hmm. that you be
co-chair of the food policy group there.
Okay, yeah. Right. And so it fits in with our show here because this is the Agriculture Show, and we like to talk about farming, and we like to talk about how agriculture fits in with, we like to hear our guests talk about in how farming fits in with what they're doing.
Yeah.
And in your case. So tell our listeners what it is that you're doing in the KW area. You're with a group that, hope I don't mash it up here, it is the Canadian Coalition for Green Healthcare.
Yep. Used to be the sustainable food manager there.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, I'm program and research manager at an environmental group, My Sustainable Canada. But in both those positions, for the past few years, we've been researching the capacity of institutions to support agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Something that the Ontario government has focused in on over the past few years. There's a pot of funding called the Broader Public Sector Investment Fund, and that's been a good source of funding to support some of the research, as well as the Amafra University of Guelph Partnership Fund, which has supported some of the more academic studies we've done over the past 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. So the floor is yours. Tell our listeners how what your activities are supporting farmers.
Okay. About 3 years ago, we started a long-term feasibility study to look at the procurement capacity of healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So there's about 300 facilities, around 100 healthcare hospital facilities in Ontario. So that's acute care, like your St. Mary's, your Grand River, et cetera. And then there's around 600, 700 long-term care homes. So there's a lot of money being spent in that healthcare sector on food. Each facility spends about $7.90 per day per patient on food. The healthcare food service market is about almost around $1 billion. And then the food piece of that, the raw food portion, is around $285 million.
Hmm.
So that's a lot of capacity for change. And what we wanted to figure out was how much of that was being spent on local food and figure out how the food system operates within these healthcare facilities so that we could understand how to increase the amount of local food in that system. The long-term feasibility study took a few approaches. There's a survey of healthcare facilities across Ontario, 150 different facilities, both acute care and long-term care. Interviews with senior officials like CEOs and VPs, and then focus groups with the supply chain, so distributors, farmers, etc., to try to figure out what the opportunities and constraints were. While we were doing that research, we also got funding to do some pilot projects. Our first project was to work with a group purchasing organization, and the way they work is they take the food purchases for a conglomerate of facilities, so they amalgamate all the purchases into one contract.
And that's existing now?
They exist right now. Every healthcare facility
for the most part, we'll buy through a GPO of some kind.
Okay.
Yeah. This one works with 28 different healthcare facilities. They contract about $12 million worth of food for those facilities every single year. And our goal working with them was to put local food language in their RFPs, so request for proposals whenever they go out for contract, whenever they go to tender, and to try to get local food procurement up on those contracts by 10%, which would be around, we looked at five different food groups. 10% on those food groups would be around $250,000. We did a host of other things like contacting the agricultural sector, making sure that they're aware that these opportunities exist. We did some educational stuff, some workshops, some cross-sectoral discussions to make sure that everyone was on the same page with respect to what we were trying to do. And whenever we went to tender, in the end, we ended up increasing procurement by 15% or $670,000 a year. And all those terms are for 2 years, so it ends up being around $1.3 million every time those contracts are renewed.
That's pretty good. And where do they typically get the food from? I know locally we have the Elmira produce auction.
Yeah.
Has that worked?
Yeah, unfortunately, healthcare facilities, they serve a pretty vulnerable population, whether it's the elderly or the sick. And that makes them incredibly risk adverse. Mm-hmm. So as a result, they've sort of tended towards buying foods from people like Maple Leaf and larger organizations that have what they say stronger health assurances or food safety assurances in place. It's made them really reluctant to make changes to the way that they buy food. And that's been a really big problem for us trying to get more direct sourcing.
Yeah, because it's a great goal and it would support farmers with those kind of sales. But it had that unique.
With $285 million being spent by healthcare every single year on food, even a small slice of that going back to local food systems would be beneficial. Mm-hmm. So their risk aversion, we actually did a food audit for those 28 healthcare facilities to figure out how much food was local at the outset. And the baseline for some categories was as little as 1% or 2%. Something like the meat contract category, a lot of it was coming from outside sources, whether it was South America or the United States. Some of it was being brought in from Australia or New Zealand. And that was a really big learning experience for the members. Whenever they saw those low thresholds of local procurement, those contracts, they wanted to do something a little bit differently. So that was really valuable. And by the end of all this work, they started to shift their mindset a little bit. They're willing to, at the start, they required that all their meats be sourced from federally certified or federally inspected facilities, which is a very difficult status to obtain for a smaller producer. But by the end, just a couple months ago, they've started shifting towards accepting meat from local abattoirs or provincially inspected facilities.
Great. Yeah,
it was actually one of the biggest and most important changes we've seen over the past few years.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good work. No, that's great to hear. That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a long. The idea sounds good, but people don't realize how much work it takes to get everything in line. All these different procedures and protocols.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the various levels have to match up.
And food and healthcare is one of those things, you know, we've tolerated bad food in that space for so long. People, you know, they don't really give it much attention to begin with. So these food service departments are kind of like in the back corner. They really get very little profile. And as a result, they're very reluctant to stick their necks out and take any sort of risks in that space.
Mm-hmm.
But we found the slow, steady approach, education, networking, has been really successful.
Well, it's certainly going to be an ongoing thing. Mm. But I hear from what you're saying that you know it's good you have success, which is getting the allowing provincially inspected plants to bid on these contracts.
And there's some food groups where they're willing to take some where they're not as concerned, like produce. The food safety concerns with produce aren't that high. It really is mostly with the proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the produce categories aren't contracted anyways because prices fluctuate and supply fluctuates so greatly. That's something they choose not to contract for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's a space where we've seen healthcare facilities be really eager to support local farmers. The problem is it's just a really tiny slice of that food budget. It represents about 10% of what they spend on food.
Well, let's play another song and we'll do another section after that. Any particular choice here? I see one called Longevity and I see one called The Head. This head and Mountains Beyond Mountains.
That's a good one, Mountains Beyond Mountains, by Arcade Fire.
Okay, let's play that. We'll be right back, folks. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
These days my life, I feel it has no purpose.
This is Brendan Wiley-Toll from My Sustainable Canada. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Thanks so much for doing that, Brendan. You'll be on this show for all of eternity now. I like using those little bits and pieces for other. You heard the one already on there.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good.
Yeah, just send royalties my way. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, you know, today it's all about creative funding.
That's right.
You know, the government's trying to put casinos in to raise some money,
right.
And all kinds of, and road signs and the 401, you name it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess funding is a big deal for what you guys are doing. You are doing as well. You are working on a hopefully ongoing government grant system, or how are you funding your work?
For MSC, there's a membership model there, so we have members, whether it's from procurement space, or we do some work with consumers as well, consumer studies, retailers, etc. So there's a little bit of a membership model there and a sale for services consulting, but a lot of our stuff is grant funded, particularly our research.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's ongoing, and I suppose if a person could donate. Is that
We should add donate tab to our button, or to our website. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we have that yet.
Creative funding. That's the buzz.
Crowdsourcing. Maybe we should start a Kickstarter campaign.
So we were just talking in between that song there. That was a great song. Yeah. Where did you hear that song?
I've been following the Arcade Fire for a while, and I just, you know, new album came out.
Yep.
It's one of the highlights, I think.
Well, it's a good choice, and it's a nice song. And I like to have one show of the year where I just play the music of all the guests we had in the show, so it's getting to be a really cool library. Quite eclectic. It goes all over the map.
Right.
Yeah. We have all the way from, square dance music to not quite thrash rock.
Right.
While we're talking about song was playing, we're just looking forward to the second part of our show with you, and we don't want to forget the future goals of the operation, but we just we're talking a little bit about your participation in the Local Food Act.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of your mandate, you're involved in that process. What sort of things are you doing with the Local Food Act?
Well, as co-chair of the Waterloo Food System Roundtable, we've recommended that they retable that, because whenever the Kathleen Wynne was reintroduced, that whole process sort of killed all those bills that were up in the air.
Mm.
So we've recommended that it gets retabled. We also were recommending that it takes a little bit of a broader approach to food and health. This one was really targeted at procurement, which as a research interest for me is important. But from a human health standpoint, I think it's important that we broaden the scope a little bit. But in terms of our research, there are some provisions in that Local Food Act that would allow the minister to set procurement targets or mandates. So you must buy, for example, 20% or 15%.
Well, you know, I saw that because I saw that. I think it was really proposed by the NDP in 2010, wasn't it?
Right.
In the one page, and I read that, and it would have guidelines for each year how mm-hmm. much they were supposed to do.
Yeah, we're a little hesitant to recommend that as an approach. I certainly think that mandating increased procurement is a good thing, but setting hard goals will be difficult at this point. For starters, none of these healthcare facilities have any idea how much local food they're buying presently. So if you went and told them to buy 20%, they wouldn't be able to report on that, which would be problematic. They also have no idea how to go about increasing their procurement. So our recommendation is, before you set hard targets, put in some sort of an easing of access program or a series of educational events or some sort of a campaign to inform healthcare facilities on how to go about doing it, why it's important, and the steps they can take to meet targets if and when they were set.
So this initiative is at a provincial level and also at a municipal level.
The Local Food Act?
Yeah. Like, there is a Local Food Act for the province proposed, but I understand the regional government also wants to have a Local Food Act, part of their policy that way.
Do you mean the region of Waterloo?
Yeah.
Oh, I actually haven't heard that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's new to me.
Okay. So maybe, I know they are interested in local food, but maybe not quite in that same way as a...
Yeah, I mean, the health department for the region of Waterloo has done a lot of research in the area.
Okay.
Wherever they can, they do their best to make sure that local food systems are present and thriving. In the past, they've actually worked with St. Mary's to establish farmers markets. And they've done food miles assessments for the region to figure out, you know, how much of the food is actually coming from local systems.
Mm-hmm.
Really depressing figures. For the average Waterloo resident, this is back in 2005, mind you, but the average food basket item, produce item, was traveling about 4,500 kilometers. So it was coming from something like California rather than from our own backyards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw those things. And Mark Zerber.
That's Mark, yeah.
Yeah, he was on the show and talked about that a little bit, and he's really interested in food issues like that.
Mm-hmm.
We just were, to bring it back to a local level, if 10% of the procurement could be grown locally, that is for our major institutions, just kind of give our listeners an idea, if we have three major hospitals, two mm-hmm. universities, a college, high school, some public schools.
Yep.
Your best guess, how much local food at the 10% goal, how much value would that be? Just kind of give our audience an idea how that fits in for Region Waterloo, for instance.
Sure. The average healthcare facility is about 200 beds. Now, Grand River is a bit bigger than that. St. Mary's is just under that. But for an average size facility, they spend about $2 million a year on food.
Mm-hmm.
So if you took that as an average between those two hospitals here, you're looking at about $4 million between the two. So 10% of that would be around $400,000.
And so this can make it more complicated, but the farmer share of that.
Yeah.
Okay, it depends. It's still a lot of money.
Yeah.
There's still an opportunity there for a local producer.
I couldn't tell you what. So if you spent a dollar on food and healthcare, I couldn't tell you what the breakdown was in terms of revenue for distribution, revenue for farmer, revenue for processor.
This is for fun on that one. In some of the stuff that I've seen, in a box of cornflakes, there's 25 cents worth of corn in it.
Yeah, there's some really depressing numbers.
At the producer level, those are big numbers, but it does limit how much of a local. It has an impact. Obviously, we're so lucky that from Waterloo Region farmers, there is, in fact, these niche markets.
Mm.
This is something you can do here that you couldn't do in other parts of Ontario because it doesn't have that large population base, so it's a good thing. Is it a major thing?
Yeah. It's tough.
One of the topics that we had talked about, EPAC, briefly, and I saw in some promotion, some literature from the Progressive Conservative in Ontario, that they were suggesting a second food terminal.
Yeah.
Does that fit into, respectfully, and whether that's a good idea for, how would that fit in with the Waterloo region?
There's a couple different models being proposed. The Greenbelt Foundation is working on one right now to set up different food hubs across Ontario, three regions, I think, London, around the GTA, and then up in eastern Ontario. And the goal there would be that those hubs are aggregators, so all the food from that given region would be aggregated in that hub, and then mainline distributors like your GFS or Cisco could go and pick up produce from those terminals. The advantage of that is you can be assured the product coming through that terminal is a product of that region. Currently, we have facilities who have demanded local product. Let's take apples as an example. Now, it's a bad year for apples, but mm-hmm. in a good year for apples, they were assured product of Ontario, and then when the box arrives, it's from Washington State. So there's something happening at the produce terminal where supply chains are getting mixed up a little bit. So the proposals are to sort of pull apart the local content so that you can be guaranteed steady supply. The other suggestion I've heard is just to have a local-only wing of the Ontario Produce Terminal, which currently aggregates product from around the world, or at least North America, I'm not sure.
Well, it sounds pretty, it's a big job you've got, and there is opportunity for the local farm population to participate as this unfolds. Certainly the allowing Ontario abattoirs, Ontario licensed abattoirs to supply this food chain is a big step. Congratulations on that. Why don't we play one more song before we do our outro? And I have queued up here. Would you like to hear Longevity or The Head?
Let's go with the second one. Stumbled across that one through South by Southwest.
Longevity?
The Head, yeah.
Oh, The Head. Okay. Yep. So obviously your host is confused. This so listen to the Agriculture Show. And we'll be right back and we'll talk a little about this song before we wrap up this section with Brendan. See you in a bit.
They call me up. Hi there, this is Dennis Jansen from Farmers Feed City speaking, and you're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Okay, that's a great song. Boy, that one, that song really steps along. Where did you hear that one? That's a great one.
Yeah, I stumbled across that one on the South by Southwest playlist from last year, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're just about done our segment here with you, Brendan, and there's lots to talk about, but let's talk about the future. What's in the works for this next year with you and your group?
Yeah, we've got a proposal in now to work with a few groups, Nursing Ontario, Alison Blay-Palmer from Wilfrid Laurier University, and then the Canadian Coalition for Green Healthcare and My Sustainable Canada. We're looking at what we're calling it unlocking public capital. So there's all these institutions across the province that have lots of land, tracts of land. Take Guelph as a good example. The long-term care home has several acres that's literally just grass at this point. Mm. So we're proposing to do a few pilot tests and some research to turn it into small plot agriculture in some form. Mm. To see if we can create some creative new enterprise models, whether it's bringing in farmers, then there's a lease setup, or if the hospital purchases the produce at a discounted rate in return for leasing the land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've lots on your plate to do.
Yeah, it should be fun.
So what do you do for fun when you're not doing busy with this stuff besides listening to music?
Actually, pretty active rock climbing. I'm an active rock climber, yeah. Went to school in Thunder Bay, and there's lots of good climbing up there.
Yeah.
And have you ever heard of Ultimate Frisbee?
The short answer is yes. The long answer is I've heard of Extreme Frisbee. Just kind of close.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Ultimate Frisbee is basically like football, except you're playing with a plastic disc.
Uh-uh.
Playing a team that tours around Canada at various tournaments.
Yeah, now that's I admired a lot. Like if you're like those Australian guys that run around playing rugby.
Yeah.
No equipment, just bashing at each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes guts.
Yeah, I bet you gotta be fearless. Get up in the air and stretched out, trying to grab something, and some other guy's trying to grab you. Is it like it's full contact? You actually tackle a guy?
It's not full contact in ultimate, but there's no padding or anything like that. So
that's enough. Well, I can feel my shins are barked already.
Yeah.
So listen, thanks so much for coming out today, Brendan.
No problem.
We have so much we got to talk about, but we're gonna move along on the show and get our second guest up for Joel. And I just want to thank you again for coming out. And we'll play out the last song of your selection you brought. And it's Longevity.
Yeah.
Okay. So, folks, it's the Agricultural Show 100.3 Sound FM. It's your host, Jeff Steger, and my guest has been Brendan Wiley-Toll. And we'll play out his song, and then we'll be back with Joel. We'll be right back.
Thank you. From the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. You're listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo.
Okay, we're back, and I'm so glad Brendan was on, and now in the second part of our show, we have another guest, and his name is Joel Johnson. Hi, Joel.
Hi, Jeff.
And I don't want to forget everyone else in the studio today. Barclay is back with us today, and I'm so always glad to have Barclay as co-host, and we have a good time talking about all kinds of things, don't we, Barclay? He's just nodding his head. He just got his tongue right now. And would you like to introduce our other guests here, and they can wave and say hello?
Sure. With On Communications, Allison Inglis and Joanne Robinson.
Hi. Perfect. So that's who's in the studio today besides all everything else that's hiding in the walls. Who knows? Not really. Just kidding. Let's talk a little about you first before we start, and bring up the first song you brought. And I didn't know. I thought you might be in Mississauga, but you're in Guelph.
Yeah, so I live in the south end of Guelph, but I'm based in Mississauga as our head office.
And your territory is all of Ontario. I'm sure you're busy.
Actually, so all of Canada is the territory that I take care of.
Holy smokes, that's a lot. And you're with BASF Canada.
Yeah, so BASF Canada, it's a multinational crop protection company.
Yep. I know that company. I use their products, too, on occasion.
Okay.
And whatever snazzy advertising gets through, but we're going to talk about the science of weeds a bit more for our listeners who may not know about the mechanics of weed control and a little bit based on the press release that you've sent out. And so we'll talk a bit more of that in the bulk of our show. And so are you an Ontario guy or a Waterloo guy?
No, I was actually, I was born in Guelph and just raised north of London, Ontario, in a place called Lucan, if you know.
I've heard of Lucan.
Yeah.
Isn't that where the Black Donnellys are?
Actually, my grade 6 teacher lives on the Black Donnellys site where they were actually there. So I had a lot of good stories growing up.
Holy smokes. The Black Donnellys, that's famous. Hey, Barclay, we have the black naps by any chance? No, nothing like that. Okay. Well, that's good to hear. So you're right in the heart of farm country down there. That's just something else. That's good dirt down there.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. So let's just kind of introduce our topic just a little bit here before we go to the first song. On our show, we attempt to bring some of the context of news stories people see. And, you know, we talk about super weeds and that sort of thing, and people are concerned. And I think if only they knew what the context to put these kind of discussions in, they would help so much. And in your press release, it's great. You talk about some of the points that we're thinking about, weed resistance and so on. Tell us a little bit in your press release. You're promoting a product that you sell, but you also bring up some very important science issues, weed control science-based issues when it comes to crop production. Just give us a little start on that first before we get into it, and then we'll play a song.
Sure. So BASF commissioned Ipsos Reid, and Ipsos Reid's a national company here that's fairly highly respected, I would say. Mm-hmm. And we've done this survey now 2 times, and I think the results coming out of this after the second time was great. But this was done with farmers across all of Canada, looking at about 500 farmers, and, you know, from all, I would say, walks of life, you know, and farm size and everything. So trying to get a full landscape of what the entire agricultural representation would be. And so we did this study in 2011 and moved it here into 2012, and obviously got the results from 2011, early 2012, and similar in 2013. And the results actually are pretty good. Mm-hmm. We're always glad to see that the awareness is being raised, and so I think that's the end game here for us.
Yeah. And you've monitored what growers are concerned about and how they're dealing with the change in the weed spectrum, and that's the part we'll do in a little bit later on our show about what that means. What does it mean when people say weed spectrum and, you know, resistant weeds?
Sure.
So so that's the framework we're working in, and I think what we'll do right now, we'll play a song.
Okay.
You've brought along five or six songs. I can hardly wait. This is great. So I just copied over to my playlist just verbatim as they showed up, and I think the first one here is it called Crazy for Clearfield?
That's right. That's so it's actually by a gentleman named Greg Stanky. He's based out of Portage, Manitoba,
uh-huh.
and actually works for BSF and done a fair bit of touring prior to working for BSF.
Okay.
Wrote a song actually about one of our products, and it's a pretty cool song to listen to, so that's where I learned about it.
Actually, I know that Clearfield. That's we heard that weed spray. What is that anyway?
So Clearfield's a production system. It's a non-GMO production system. It's done by mutagenesis, so it's a naturally occurring process, and it's just resistant to Clearfield chemistries, essentially. So you can go in and spray out weeds that that don't have that tolerance.
Now, that's in Ontario as well?
Yeah, so that's all across Canada. So there's Clearfield canola, Clearfield wheat, Clearfield lentils, Clearfield corn.
You know, I got to get tuned in. I've heard this name before. You're actually doing a good job, but I didn't think about it. Let's play this song first. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Crazy for the clear field system now. Gord Grant here, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Sound FM 100.3 on your dial, or maybe channel 946 on your Rogers digital cable, or perhaps streaming live from www.soundfm.ca.
Well, that's a great little song there. That's a song about Clearfield. That's great. Every company should have someone who's got a good singer like that.
I agree.
Yeah, that's good.
It's fun.
That's a good deal. We had last week we had a guest on from the Weekly Trending Fandom Show, which is on just before our show, and we talked about computer games and agriculture. And I didn't realize, you know, I don't know about you, on Facebook they have Farmville.
Yes.
And they had Sim Farm at one time.
Yes.
Well, this guy, he's talking about something called Golden Meadows or Golden Harvest back in the 80s or something like that. All kind of, he just knows video games like the back of your hand. Like, you know your chemistry and he knows his video games.
Sure. Yeah, I never heard of that one, Golden Harvest.
I know. I think I got the right name there. What was it, Golden Harvest, I think?
I can't remember.
You can't remember? You're my go-to guy, Bartley. How can this be? Anyway, so it was a good show. We had a lot of fun. And so today now we're talking about Joel Johnson. We're talking a little about weeds and... I just thought we'd get right into the topic, and I'm looking at the third paragraph of the news release, and it says, "Needle is moving," says Joel Johnson, BSF brand manager for Western Herbicides. "Resistance is an issue and is not going away. More and more growers are becoming aware, and the perceptions are changing." So as you pointed out in our first opening part, your study did show that the growers are becoming more aware. But what is resistance? What does our listeners have to know what weed resistance is?
Well, essentially, weed resistance is when a weed is tolerant and a certain level of tolerance, I'd say, to a certain chemistry or a group of site binders. And mm-hmm. so when we utilize a product year over year, you tend to screen for those natural resistant types that are within that field of a weed.
Yeah, you force it to evolve.
That's right. Yeah. And so that's these are all naturally occurring things that are within the actual population of a field. Mm-hmm. And, you know, regardless of whether or not you spray or not, they are there. And so when you naturally spray them out, you're enhancing that or making it pollinate. And when it cross-pollinates, it starts to produce seed. And then over time, that weed will become dominant within the field.
So today's superweed will become tomorrow's. We can handle that weed.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I mean, superweeds is something that we've heard a lot of. I'm not sure that I believe in that term. I think the end of the day, when we're talking about weed control, we're trying to do the best job that we can to manage farms. And you know, when you look at a farm perspective, I'd say everybody out there is looking to cash in on an ROI. Mm-hmm. So everybody is based off of a return on investment. It's a business. And so no one's going to go out there and you know, spray just because they can spray. They're mm-hmm. always looking at whether or not that is valuable to their farming operation and what the actual investment or the return on that investment is.
Yeah, well, some of the movies and about agriculture you see, especially the latest, I call them mockumentaries or documentaries, I suppose, and they're showing typical spray operations, and as if this is some new thing, but this is always, we've always tried to control weeds, and whether we picked them by hand or now we have with iron with cultivators and shovels for a while, and now we have chemicals to do that.
Yeah, and
not used indiscriminately. These are expensive products, and you use them only as much as is needed. It's not just like dump that stuff on.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, okay. You got it.
Okay. Because sometimes when you see those images, it does kind of shock you. Think, oh, my God, what's going on? But this is, you don't want to do that if you don't have to.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, it's all based off of a return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually surprising if you go on to any sites, and the International Weed Science Survey mm-hmm. is actually one of the good ones that's based out of the U.S. They actually have an example on there that shows even in China where they're doing a lot of hand weeding of rice fields. Barnyard grass is a big issue over there in rice fields.
Oh, yeah.
And the barnyard grass, the way that you can tell the difference between a barnyard grass and a rice plant is that barnyard grass has a red stem and the rice grass doesn't. It actually has a green stem. So that's how they were naturally picking these. And over a matter of years, as they continued to pick these things, the barnyard grass evolved to basically only have the green stems. And so now it's basically they were leaving the barnyard grass because they were picking it. So regardless, there's naturally occurring plants out there that have resistance traits to whatever we're doing.
No, I think that would be quite, and that's a great story, and I hope that should help our listeners understand that plants do evolve, whether you do it with sprays or by traditional cultural practices.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, we had a guest on a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about sulfur.
Okay.
And now there's a shortage of sulfur in crops because now we have better scrubbers on the power plants in the Ohio Valley, and now we don't have that acid rain causing sulfur. So well, we fix one thing and something else breaks.
That's right. Yep, yep, yep.
So rest assured, folks, that when crops when crop sprays are used, it's not you don't use it just dump that stuff on. It costs money, and you want to use it to target the weeds you're after. And I noticed here that so the BASF has numerous compounds, and they're now organized into modes of action. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about how chemicals work and when they kill weeds, modes of action, they're related to each other, those two terms?
Sure. So every chemical has a mode of action, and it's just essentially the way that the chemical goes into the plant and how it affects the plant's naturally occurring process to ensure that you would get that necrosis of that plant. And so BASF, yeah, we have a fair bit of different groups and different modes of action. There are a fair bit of different modes of action within the industry, and we utilize these things to try and control certain weeds. And so the main thing is to try and utilize multiple modes or multiple groups of these chemistries to ensure that you get that necrosis of all the plants that you're looking at in your field.
Well, that's important, too, because there's no sense putting on something that's not going to control the weed you want. So, but you also want to be mindful of how much it costs too. So it's funny about agriculture. In a farmer's typical career, he does his thing 40 times.
Yes.
Because it's only once a year you plant crops.
Yes.
I don't know how many things. This is going to sound funny, but how many things that people do would you trust if they only did it 40 times? You want some? I remember reading somewhere if you want to be a professional sports player, you've got to spend 10,000 hours for something to become an expert at it.
Right. Yeah.
But that's Mother Nature, and that's what we're up against, folks. And as farmers produce crops, and it's through companies like BASF that provide products to do that, so we can provide food to the public, our end of it as farmers. Which in Canada, I mean, the Food Freedom Day was I think February 14th this
year. That's right.
Yep. And that's when the typical Canadian has paid for their food bill. But I think the Food Freedom Day for the farmers was like January 7th or some ridiculous thing. There's a lot of addition to that cost up to the stream of things. So why don't we play another song here?
Sure.
And we'll get into another part of our show. So here's another one. I'm just taking them as they came down here.
Sure.
This is the Rascal Flatts. Who's a rascal?
Yeah, with I Melt. That's a great song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's play that, and we'll talk about where you heard that song, and then we'll be right back, folks. It's the Agriculture Show at CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
When you light those candles up there on that mantel, setting the mood. I just lie there staring, silently preparing to love on you. Well, I can feel the heat from across the room. Ain't it wild what a little flame can make you wanna do? love the way I lose it every time. What's even better is knowing that forever you're all mine. The closer you get, the more my body aches. One little stare from you is all it takes.
Charlevoix from Kitchener. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
We're back. It's the Agriculture Show with Joel Johnson and my co-host Barkley Knapp, and the ladies have left. They have other jobs to do, so we'll hope they have a safe trip home. Well, that's a great song. Now, that one was by Rascal Flatts. Where did you hear that song?
Oh, I've been a Rascal Flatts fan for a while, but that one actually was playing right before my daughter was born, my first daughter. So that's got a pretty big dart in my heart, I would say, when I hear it.
Ah, it's a favorite song. What? Where are they from? Do you know they a Canadian band by chance?
I'm not entirely sure. They're from the U.S. somewhere, but I don't know where.
Well, hopefully we can play some more of these great songs.
Seems like Barkley knows.
Yeah, he's... Yeah. You heard him before, Barkley?
They're the Bible Belt area.
Yeah. Bible Belt?
Yeah.
In the States, somewhere like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, it's a great song. They have lots of passion.
Yes, I agree.
Well, we're moving right along here, folks, and I just talked with Joel, and I think we'll go back to the press release, and there's some interesting stuff in there, and we're going to talk about more about the survey, and I hope our listeners can hear in Joel's explanation that the kind of decisions that farmers are trying to make as they grow the crops for the market. So, tell us a little bit more about what your survey found and the type of things that farmers are trying to decide when they use weed spray.
Sure. So I think just to set up what the survey was, in 2011, like I said earlier, we did a survey and have rerun this survey in 2012, and it's specifically around herbicide resistance. And I think the perception of all these farmers as to what herbicide resistance is doing and how it's impacting their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at it from, I would say, 2012, we're looking at 63% of those farmers do agree that weeds in their field are getting tougher to control. So that's actually up 7 points from 2011.
Okay.
And that's good because not that it's weeds are getting tougher to control in their field, but the fact that they're going out there and they're being more aware and they're taking a look at their fields, and so they're seeing a difference.
You can't control what you don't know.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're being better managers of their farm and they're taking a look at that. And I think when you look at it from a perspective of glyphosate, and so for those that don't know what glyphosate is, glyphosate's one of the most used chemicals around the world. In fact, probably the most used chemical around the world. It's sold here by various different manufacturers. Mm-hmm. But glyphosate's one of the biggest utilized products that we have in modern agriculture today. And so there's been a lot of news regarding glyphosate resistance, I would say, in Ontario and even Western Canada, mm-hmm. With the fact that we have now four resistant weeds that have been found in fields that are resistant to glyphosate applications. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to increase the awareness and trying to ensure that the utilization of glyphosate remains sustainable mm-hmm. long term.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't want to lose the use of that chemistry.
Correct.
Yes.
And so when you look at it from the farmer's perspective, or what their perception is that they're saying they agree that glyphosate by itself is actually getting tougher to use. And so they're agreeing that they're trying to use multiple mode of action strategy mm-hmm. To ensure that they're getting necrosis of those plants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at it from a bottom line perspective, that's where they really see the impact on their bottom line, is when they have weeds in their fields of growing a quality crop. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, you know, the fact that whether or not we can get more production or not, this is all about growing good quality crop to export or sell into the local food market.
That's why I'm telling our listeners that the glyphosate, that's a chemical name for a product that might be more popularly known as Roundup, and that was a patented product produced by Monsanto, and that patent came off, what, two, three years ago, I think.
I'm not sure when it came
off. It's been some time. Mm-hmm. So it was a great product. It still is a great product. And things have evolved, and now we're back into either new chemistries or reformulations of existing products.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that the survey did kind of, as you say, the guys are inspecting their fields, and the reason they're doing that is they don't want to spend all that money on spray. They don't have to. They want to know what they got and spray for that.
That's correct.
Yeah. And you get good advice here about rotating crops and the chemistry groups. We had a little short story about rotating crops. The topic, I had a young friend of mine say, all I know about agriculture is monoculture. What's that? And we had a little show on that the rotation of crops. Maybe you could add a little bit about rotating your crops means monoculture versus 1, 2, 3, 5-year rotations. Just a little, give our listeners a little idea of what rotating your crops means, as you've mentioned in the...
Sure. And so within a field and what you're producing as a farmer in Ontario, we typically have probably a 3-year rotation.
Yeah.
So what that looks like is seeding corn, soybeans, and winter wheat crops. And that's one crop a year. And so essentially what crop rotation is by rotating those crops. Now in other, I would say, areas or some people as well will continually crop one crop. And, you know, I would say the perspective is when you're continually using the same crop, is it's harder to control the weeds that are in that field because yeah. you're consistently spraying the same chemicals. Or even if you're rotating the chemicals, the weeds that are in there are adapting to what's going on.
Yeah, they like that environment. They like that particular corn environment, and then they say, oh, I'll stay growing here. And that, yeah.
yeah. So our best defense is by rotating crops or continuing to rotate crops,
yeah.
even if it's not a mono rotation, but a bi-rotation. When you're looking at it from a 2-year perspective,
mm-hmm.
That's even better than 1 year. And, you know, as we continue on in Western Canada, there's a lot of 4-year rotations. But it all depends on, again, what crops can be grown
yeah.
in the certain climate that there is.
Now, you made mention before we finish this segment, let's read the whole thing. It's not too late to address resistance with sustainable Canadian farm best practices and innovative BSF chemistry solutions. So we talked a little about the chemistry. Canadian farm best practices, is there... Now, I know they've come out with, best practices booklets from the government. Are those the same ones you're talking about, or what do you mean by sustainable Canadian farm best practices?
Yeah, so those are similar to what we're talking about when we say that. I think at the end of the day,
yeah.
From a farming perspective, we are always trying to be sustainable. And actually have some survey results here from both surveys. And it's interesting to see both in 2011 and 2012 the attitude towards sustainable farming hasn't changed. 100% of all of our farmers across Canada are looking at sustainable practices.
Yeah, I should add something in there. I sort of misspoke. The sustainable for our purpose on our show is, can I make a living?
That's right.
As farmers, that's our goal. Yeah. Sustainable means so much to so many different people.
That's right.
I think I would have preferred to have said Canadian farm best practices. What does that mean?
Yes, and so Canadian farm best practices, again, comes down to utilizing the land properly, making sure that land stays in production year over year. When you look at a land perspective, that's how farmers make their money. That's how they make their living.
Yes.
And so if they can't continue to do that, or if they do something that wouldn't give you that sustainable practice, or the long-term vision, then you wouldn't have money coming in the next year.
That's right.
So we're all out there to try and continue to use that land the best way we can. Again, come back to sustainable practices around an ROI perspective. Mm-hmm. So continue to look at those return on investments and only use products when we need them.
And sustainable, the good news is most farmers, we just want to make a living. So whatever the consumer wants, we can do. This is what it costs. And
that's
so
right.
That's sustainability. And if those sustainability definitions by other people include certain more enhanced things than we do now, maybe more buffer protection from waterways, we can do that too. But it's expensive and just got to be paid for it. So
yeah, and I think technology has really changed that as well.
Mm-hmm.
The more we advance in technology within agriculture, the better off we are being, moving to systems like GPS guided, things like that, so there's less overlap. All those types of things are definitely advantages in what we've done. Step forward.
So I'm getting ready to play this song, and this next song says it's 10 minutes long. Is that possible?
Well, that's Stairway to Heaven. You can probably move on for that one. I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan,
I'd love to play that. Barkley, would that be a hoot? I'd love to play Stairway to Heaven, but we're not going to, because that's take too long. We want to get close to the end of our show here. And the next one is not really tagged here. It's a four-minute song, and then there's one called Megalomaniac by Incubus.
Yep. So it depends on what you want to listen to, I guess. There's a couple of things in there. There's Bob Marley, who I'm a big fan of as well.
I think that must be the Bob Marley song, because some of the songs you have don't have the ID3 tag stuck
in.
So we'll play Bob Marley because you're going to listen to everything on our show. We got the best show going. And we'll be back to do a little roundup with Joel and sign off for the day. We'll be back, folks. This is episode 44 of the Agriculture Show.
So in love with you, it just keeps getting better.
This is Joel Johnson from BASF Canada. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Waterloo Federation of Agriculture represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of the innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Oh, thanks so much. That's great. It's just a treat to have my guest put those little promos together for us. It's good fun. Sure. So tell us about that last song there.
Yeah, so it wasn't Bob Marley. Amazed by Lone Star. Yes. And that just happens to be my wedding song that was our first dance with my wife and I. And I know she's listening today, so make sure that she heard that song for sure.
Well, I'm glad we got that on. And we'll do that Bob Marley as we finish off our show here, the second last segment that we're in now. So, boy, this has been fun, Joel. We've covered a lot of stuff here today. We covered the press release, a little bit about the survey you did, the results, a little bit about the science of weed control, the different what weed resistance is, modes of action. I think that pretty well covers the main points there. Have I done that proper justice?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. The general message here is that there's a lot of stuff in behind the scenes when it comes to modern agriculture. It's not just super weeds. It has to be put in the proper framework, another framework that this is an ongoing issue. And I did love your story about the evolution of the barnyard grass in the rice fields.
Yes.
The barnyard grass?
Yeah, barnyard grass in the rice fields, yes.
That just shows how Mother Nature will always win. We always win. We just try to keep a little step ahead so we can provide food for society.
So the one thing I'd like to say just about BASF and sustainability, so we actually have done a fair bit of sustainability practicing pieces, and actually one of the things that I was quite interested in that we did this year was we actually went downtown Toronto, downtown Waterloo here as well, and then downtown London, and went on the streets and just asked a whole bunch of people that probably, maybe knew something about agriculture, maybe not, just what, if they had the chance, what would they ask a farmer? And it was quite interesting to see the results. We had, I think there was 150 people that we stopped, and just every single question you could think of is from how do you make a living to why can't everybody grow organics, you name it from a question perspective. So it's pretty neat to see that. And out of that, we ended up taking five people. Mm-hmm. So one out of London, two out of Cambridge, I believe, and two out of Toronto. And taking them to farms. And so we actually took them to farms, flew them either to Western Canada or to Eastern Canada here, and let them meet with a farmer and ask all their questions, non-scripted, just ask the questions, talk to a real-life farmer to see what you would say. And it's pretty interesting, all the different results that we got and the questions and the answers. It was quite interesting to see, I would say, the end consumer meeting with a farmer. And so you can view all of those on our YouTube site at the BASF Ag Solutions YouTube site.
Now, that would make a great show, because that's a big part of what we're trying to do here is to match up what people want and what farmers need and their perceptions and what they want to ask farmers is. That'd be a great show. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. We'll do that sometime.
Sure.
Or whenever the next great survey comes along.
Sure.
So, we have done really well here today. We're almost at 3:30 today. And, Joel, just thanks so much for coming out today. I hope you had fun.
I did. I appreciate it.
And thanks for your music collection. We'll play the Bob Marley at this stage, and then we'll try to do a short wrap-up after that with Barkley, and that'll be our show for the day. So we'll be back in a few short moments after we play Bob Marley.
this morning. Smile with the rising sun.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, folks, that's it for our show today, and I hope you enjoyed it. We had some great guests. We had Brendan Wiley-Toll from the Coalition for Green Ontario and the food issues, and we've had Joel Johnson from BSF Canada talking a little bit about weed control and so on. Barclay, I hope you enjoyed the show, too. It was very interesting, wasn't it?
Well, you got so much to go on, it's hard to retain it all.
Yeah, and, you know, I know you enjoy talking to our guest, too, and I hope you had a good chat with Joel before he has to leave the station and you caught up in how to grow rutabagas.
Well, there's a whole lot of things to grow. It just, you know, it's you know, you got one guest saying, you know, where you can grow it and getting everyone to support local initiatives and reducing the footprint, and the other one saying how to... great to understand the competition amongst plants as weeds.
Yeah. I kind of really like to get a hold of that guy who did the Clearfield song because I could use a good song for the agriculture show.
You think so? You don't think you could come up with one yourself?
I think it'd be really awful. Could you do a song?
Maybe with bongos, but that wouldn't go very well.
That's okay. You know, da-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da preparing for your next crop year, I guess, getting the garden ready.
Well, with this weather come blasting in, it's hard to think spring, though I know watching the news last night, a lot of complaints on the streets, because this time of year, everyone was in shorts. And this time of year last year, we had our confused apple trees that thought it was spring and started to blossom. Then we had a cold snap. And those apple trees got hit hard, and the blossoms got lost.
I haven't got a farmer's almanac for a long time. Do you know what it's calling for this year at all?
You're asking the wrong person.
You don't get that either? Don't like all those little recipes in there and all that other cool stuff?
Sometimes surprises are good because it keeps you on your toes.
Yes, truly.
And if you know what the future's going to bring, then you're not going to be on your toes. You're just going to be, you know, too laid back.
Did you ever think there was so much local, like you think of the buying power of the local universities and school boards and all those things? They do buy a lot of food in here, don't they?
Oh, they do. And just the numbers that the first guest was throwing off, like the, you don't think of it, but there's cities within cities themselves. They have to, and he uses the word first guest procure, you know, they have to obtain all that food. Like, you can't just go to the grocery store with a couple carts and start loading that up. That's a full tractor trailer that's coming in every other day, pretty much. And you have different outlets that are serving.
Yeah, it's so tough. Like he pointed out, the hospitals obviously and the public, you got to have certain food standards that may be more difficult to do. And I mean, the arbitrage is good, but the other part of it too is what the taxpayer doesn't want money spent. They have to provide Ontario food at the same price or less than what you could buy commercially. It's a huge job. Oh, man.
You got to think of the hidden costs on it too, like all the fuel that's used. You know, on our roads, the roads constantly getting refixed. All that truck traffic that comes out of taxes, and you know, what are the average plate travels 2,000 miles or something like that? Mm-hmm. The average plate of finished food or food for your meal. That's a lot of wear and tear on the roads. That's a lot of pollution. That's a lot of fumes that have been, that are in your lungs, and who knows what that's all doing to our body.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of salt that's put on the roads and calcium put on the roads, that going into the soil and then leaching into say someone's well.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of hidden costs to obtaining our food from distant sources. If it's local, price is a little higher. Well, it's fresh. Two, there's a lot less negative benefits to it or negativities to it. You're helping the environment, and that's in turn helping prevent whatever ailing us. We're not designed to take in a whole lot of pollution and a whole lot of chemicals. Our bodies aren't designed for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I just admire what Brenda's trying to do. It's a lot of work to try to get that lined up and to get healthy food for everybody with all the concerns nowadays. So.
Well, I love hearing stories. People go down to Florida and they say, I had an orange off the tree. I've never had anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here we see it in boxes. You know, it's hard to imagine that they actually come from a tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't grow orange trees up here for the reason of our seasonality.
Mm-hmm. So.
But it's amazing to hear stories of everyone else and their travels.
Well, I think we're probably going to have to call it quits. If we don't... I'm dismayed that perhaps the computer I used to record the song is probably already shut off, and I won't be able to include that little chat in the thing. But we're optimistic. We draw it up now. I think we may have another 5 minutes on there. So I think I'll I'm just going to play the last song that Joel had. I'm going to it's a Megalomaniac here. I kind of like that song. Like a couple great song. So with that, folks, we're going to call it a wrap for the Agriculture Show. Thanks so much, Barclay, for coming in. And we'll hope to see you next week, and I hope to have another good guest next week. Hopefully you have the movie critic. That'll be a hoot. And we'll talk about Soylent Green and all that kind of stuff. So, I think that would be a good one to include, and like what image that has of agriculture now. I do remember that movie. They had the part where the guy had this like precious little bottle of real ripe cherries. Because somewhere in the world, that world, there's still been growing some things, and this is a huge delicacy. Anyway, folks, that's next week's show. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed your afternoon. It's Jeff Steger, your host, The Agriculture Show. This is episode 44, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now. I'm
you